Welcome to Defined by Moments. As today's beliefs and behaviors determine who we become tomorrow, this moment, right now, is how we learn to live better so that we can lead better. Now, let's turn it over to Dr. Joel Medley for today's lesson from God's Word.
All right, welcome back, friends, and go ahead and grab your Bibles and turn to Proverbs chapter 5. Now, if you know anything about the book of Proverbs, when we get here, you know that this is an entire chapter that focuses on the warning against adultery. So the title for this episode is called The Fidelity. So Proverbs for Leaders, and we're going to focus in on the fidelity. Now, the best way that I know how to explain why we are here is this past January when I went to Tanzania on a short-term missions trip. We were helping put on a pastor's conference, and some of the pastors that were there in the group were talking about expository preaching, and someone asked, well, why is expository preaching important? And I will never forget this answer from a good friend of mine in Andrew, North Carolina. He said that we need to use expository preaching because we preach the whole book. God has put hard truths in certain areas, as well as more popular, kinder truths, but we need the whole record of what God has for us. When we get here to Proverbs chapter 5, we get to a topic that many in our modern day would look at and go, well, that's old-fashioned. You know, this individual is really out of touch with reality. But again, let's go back to what we learned in Proverbs chapter 3. The source of all wisdom is not here on this earth. That source of wisdom is God. Wisdom existed before the world was created. So in order to understand how and the way that we should live, we need to turn to other places than the world. In Proverbs chapter 5, verses 1 and 2, Solomon lays out for us, again, an appeal to his son. So this is that paternalistic aspect of, son, listen to me. And he says, be attentive to my wisdom. Incline your ear to understanding that you may keep discretion and your lips may guard knowledge. In this short two-verse passage that's opening up, we see that wisdom is self-discipline. And what I mean by self-discipline is that we do not allow today's impulse to undo tomorrow's intent. Let me say that again. We do not allow today's impulse to undo tomorrow's intent. And Solomon is about to point to one of the biggest areas that creates issues. It is this aspect of remaining faithful in your sexual relationship with your spouse. Now, the way that we're going to proceed through this passage is we're going to do three sections. Verses 3 through 6 looks at the forbidden fool's gold. Verses 7 through 14 looks at the forecast future grief. And then finally, we're going to wrap up with verses 15 through 21 of forged for good. So let's really take a look at what is said here in verse 3. So Solomon, now remember, he is not the prime example of faithfulness in this regard. So you can almost imagine that this is him at the end of his life looking back. But in verse 3, he says, for the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. This aspect of honey speaks of sweetness. The oil means that it is easy. There's no friction. It's just smooth. But there is an empty side to this. The latter part of this in verse 4, but in the end, she is a bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. It appears to be honey and sweet, but in fact, it's very bitter and it's going to hurt. There appears to be oil and that it's just easy and free-flowing, but in actuality, it's dry. It's empty. You know, in our modern world today, the phrasing is that casual sex is okay. You can see that there are studies out there that show it. But Solomon says, no, that's not the case. We need to make sure that we are self-disciplined. We're not impulsive. The purpose that we have to have in our life is that we have discretion. Now, what do I mean by that? This is where we need to back up to verse 2. That you may keep discretion, that you may understand your purpose. And in this section, what is our purpose when it relates to the issue of sexual relationship? It goes back to Genesis 2:24. where God very clearly says, you know, a man and woman shall leave their father and mother and cleave to one another. In other words, we are made for connection. We are made for intimacy. We desire those things. God has put that in us, but there is a right way and a wrong way. If you continue looking through verses 4, 5, and 6, you're going to see that if you continue to go down that way, it's going to lead to death. It's going to lead to stumbling. Ultimately, in verse 6, this path, if you choose to operate outside the bounds of what God has placed for physical intimacy, then you're not pondering the path of life. It appears to be good. It appears to be something that is, you know, easy and right. Well, everybody else is doing it, but it's not. And here is the powerful part. We should not waste the wonderful, the relationship that we have with our chosen spouse, for what will turn out to be woeful, operating outside of the bounds of marriage. It's forbidden because God has said, no, we should not be doing this. But it's also fool's gold. You think it's valuable, but it's not. And when you have stepped outside of that relationship and you have hurt your spouse, then what ends up happening is that that bitterness gets into your soul. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Look at verses 7 through 14. This is where we get to the forecast of the future grief. If you choose to go down that road, verse 7, Solomon again says, listen to me. Don't get away from what I'm telling you, but look at verse 8. Keep your way far from her, and do not go near to the door of her house. That's very clear. Verse 9, lest you. So he's saying, if you do this, then these things are going to happen. What does he say? Lest you give your honor to others. If you commit adultery, then you're going to lose your honor. You're going to lose your good name. Continuing through that, for your years to the merciless. Think of that. It's not just that you're going to lose your honor, but you're going to suffer a long time. This is going to be the cruelty that comes. Verse 10, lest strangers take their fill of your strength and your labors go to the house of a foreigner. Look at verse 11. And at the end of your life you groan when your flesh and your body are consumed. This is a struggle because you're losing your honor. You've seen that the struggle is going to be for a long time, but your ability is going to be gone. What do I mean by that? When your strangers take their fill of your strength and your labors go to the house of a foreigner, you can't seem to escape it. Your reputation is tainted. The trust that others had in you, it's gone. But as we've talked about, this is lifelong regret. This aspect where it says to groan, it presents the image of an animal that has been consumed by a lion. You know, once I hate watching those nature shows when you see the antelope or whatever animal is being chased by a lion, or these wildebeest trying to go through the water and the crocodiles are there. It's like, oh no, please make it. But when they capture the lions or the cheetahs or whatever else, when they capture that antelope and they've got him in their jaws, and you can hear that animal crying. It's like, rah, whatever the sound may be that they make. That is this aspect of groaning, someone that is in pain, someone that is going down to be vanquished. Now, I want to be very clear here in this passage. I am not in any way insinuating that women are seductresses. This is Solomon talking to his son, and as a father talking to his son, he is warning him about going with women that are not the spouse. This can be applied the opposite direction. If Solomon was talking to his daughter, he would be saying, my daughter, avoid the strange man. So this is talking to his son. This is not making any kind of assumption whatsoever about gender. This is the point that he is making, that you have a choice to be faithful or not. There are implications for either way. And Solomon is saying, don't fall into that trap. You know, we think about adultery and we kind of smirk. Well, you know, I have never stepped outside of my marriage. I'm perfectly fine. Well, let's go to the New Testament. In Matthew chapter 5, verses 27 through 28, Jesus raises the standard. You know, he says, "You have heard it said, but I say unto you," and he says that if a man looks at a woman and lusts after her in his heart, he has already committed the act of adultery. What does your mind do? That's the challenge. That's the standard. It's not the physical act alone. It's what you're dwelling upon. It's the heart of the matter. Which is why, if we look back at Proverbs chapter 4, how does Solomon wrap that up? He says you need to guard your heart. So we think about this, and we may smirk and go, okay, well, it's really taboo, but let's stop and think about this. So much of this kind of a lifestyle is wrapped up in popular culture. If you go back, I mean, listen to the Oak Ridge Boys sometime, a country group that so many people would listen to. But back in the late 70s and the early 80s, they had a hit song called Trying to Love Two Women. And the lyrics of that song, in one part, it says that the pleasure ain't worth the pain. Because trying to love two women, what? It's a long old grind, and it tires your mind. Never mind that it's wrong. But their whole piece is, well, I mean, you know, everybody's doing it, but it just kind of tires you out. No, that's not what's being advocated here. I want to be very clear with something. There is no such of a thing as falling in love. But plenty of people are falling out of the commitment to love. That's where this choice comes down to. And you're going to see in just a few minutes why I call this the fidelity. Okay? So we see the forbidden fool's gold. We see the forecast of future grief. And then finally, let's look at verses 15 through 21. This is forged for good. Solomon says, everything else is wrong. This is the right way. He says, drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. Should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the streets? Now, this is kind of a weird piece of language, but what he's saying is you need to satisfy your thirst from your own well. In other words, this desire for physical intimacy should be satisfied by your spouse, not a stranger. You need to love the one that you've committed to. You need to desire the one that you've committed to. Far too often, the slippery slope begins when someone goes, well, I don't have this. I would like that. Rather than being content, thankful for, and appreciative of the spouse that you have, you start to think, well, I don't have this. When we lose our contentment, we become prideful. And when pride gets involved, poor decisions are made. Now, verse 16 is kind of a weird one. Should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the street? So think about this. If you had a spring, would you just let your water flow out into the streets, or would you try and tap that and use that to benefit your family? Obviously, it's the latter. Well, what this verse is kind of contemplating is, how would you feel if someone in your family just threw all that water out in the streets? It would make you feel like that water had been betrayed, right? Well, it's almost presenting the image of, well, that's what you do when you operate outside the realms of what God has created for physical intimacy. But look at verse 17. He says, let them be for yourself alone and not for strangers with you. There it is, spouse versus stranger. Verse 18, let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth. The one that you have chosen, you need to keep that commitment to. That's plain and simple. Now we get to these verses that, you know, as middle school children you would read and chuckle. But there's a beautiful image here where Solomon says, a loving deer or graceful doe, let her breast fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always in her love. Verse 20, why should you be intoxicated, my son, with a forbidden woman and embrace the bosom of an adulteress? So we see twice the use of this word intoxicated. Now, when we hear that, we immediately go to alcohol. Someone that has consumed too much alcohol, they've lost control of themselves. We may look at them and think they're silly, they stumble. But think about that as the image of how you are filled with the love of your spouse. What happens when someone is intoxicated, they're recovered, they go right back to it? You know, that is what we need to be like when we're choosing to love our spouse. We have one desire, we have one taste, and it's for that individual. The latter part of the chapter closes out where God says Solomon says, "For a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths." You might think that if you step outside the bounds of marriage or step outside the scriptural principle of purity before marriage, well, no one's really going to know. This very clearly shows that God's eyes are everywhere. And let's go back to the New Testament standard that Christ set, that if you think that in your mind, it's as if you've already committed the act. God knows that. So Solomon is being very clear that you have to be careful in what you do. You know, and again, coming back to the popular culture, again, country music, back in the 80s, there was an artist by the name of Earl Thomas Conley who had a song called Holding Her and Loving You. And in essence, he talks about the third hardest thing that he's ever had to do. The second hardest thing that he ever had to do was telling her, his wife, about you, which was his mistress. That is completely inverted. That is in no way love, except for himself. But God knows that. God has created a path for fulfillment for us if we choose to listen to it. If we do not, what happens? Verse 23, "For he, the one that chooses not to follow God's plan, dies for lack of discipline." This again is where you see this aspect of a quick impulse undoes our true intent. And it says, "And because of his great folly, he is led astray." That word led astray there in Hebrew is intoxicated. Goes back to what we talked about earlier. He has one taste for one thing, and it's not the spouse that he should have. It's this other individual. This is a very serious piece. Most folks are like, it's really not that bad. I disagree. Think about what we talk about here with defined by moments. How we live determines how we lead. Well, if you live this way in private, very quickly it's going to come out in public. So just simply beyond the fact of the fidelity, you have made a commitment, are you keeping that commitment? It raises this very important statement. If you cannot be faithful in your private life, then you will not be faithful in public. Let me say that again. If you cannot be faithful in your private life, then you will not be faithful in public. Because who we are in private, that's who we really are. And Solomon, in talking to his son about this aspect of physical intimacy and getting it in the right way as described by God, if he is wise in his private life, then guess what? That same wisdom is going to appear in public. So it all goes back to what we see in Proverbs chapter 4. Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 23 says, "Keep your heart with all vigilance. Pursue protecting your heart." Why? Because out of it flows the springs of your life. If you let your heart become distracted by pursuit for someone that you should not, then it will take you to the life that you do not want. I'm going to wrap this up again with that simple statement. If you are not faithful in your private life, then you will not be faithful in your public life. Thank you so much for listening to Defined by Moments, where we discuss topics showing that how we live determines how we lead. Hope to have you back in the not-too-distant future, and you take care.